This is the Thirsty Developer, episode number 26 for July 4th, 2008. Designer-developer workflow with Karina Barber and Tim Hewer. Welcome, everyone, to the Thirsty Developer. I'm Dave Bost.
And I'm Larry Clarkin.
So today, Larry, we're going to talk with Karina Barber and Tim Hewer about designer-developer workflow. And we actually had a chance to sit down with Karina and Tim at a recent event that we had in Chicago called Riopalooza.
It's kind of funny that when we were going to the event, there was a security guard in the building that we had it in. We had it at the Illinois Technology Association. And when I walked in the front door there, she goes, "Are you here for Riopalooza?" She said something like that. And I didn't want to correct her because I figured she was not into rich internet applications.
Right. So the idea of this Riopalooza event, this was actually kind of a culmination across multiple different technology communities, you know, the Adobe user group and the Microsoft.net user group. And the idea is, you know, as you know, the name is kind of taken from Lollapalooza. And Lollapalooza is this music festival that takes place in Chicago where they essentially have kind of a mishmash of different musical acts that come together for a musical festival. So the idea with Riopalooza is kind of a mishmash of different kind of RIA-type technologies and coming together and just, you know, Saturday afternoon and discussing sort of the different ins and outs of building and architecting and working with RIA applications.
I think Dave Meeker, who was the kind of keynote speaker on Friday night, we had a social event where we had a keg of beer and some pizza. You know, Dave really, you know, kind of summed up the event that we're here talking about redefining the web, right? Because, you know, RIA technologies, while there's, you know, there are some in place right now, like Adobe's Flex, you know, Microsoft Silverlight, you count WPF in there. Some people actually count Ajax-type technologies in there with some of the advanced frameworks that they've got. But he said, you know, that we're really talking about what is the next generation of the web going to be like. And, you know, he kind of summed it up pretty well with that statement.
Yeah, there's also kind of a debate that RIA doesn't necessarily have to do with just web as well, right?
And the whole internet versus interactive.
Right. I mean, the idea is that when we talk about RIA-type technologies, you know, rich internet applications, and there's also kind of this discussion, is it rich internet applications or rich interactive applications? Because, I mean, me personally, the way I look at RIA development, it's really about building the next generation of applications that really provide a nice immersive user experience. And that's what it's really about.
Yeah, and leveraging, you know, the internet technologies, not necessarily the internet itself. Because you can do a lot of this stuff, you know, on your corporate networks or your private networks. That's perfectly a valid pattern.
Right. You kind of hear this discussion about, you know, software plus services, the idea that you have a kind of a rich kind of client-based application that's utilizing the service protocols or even the internet protocols to communicate with some sort of back-end service to provide that really, you know, the meat and potatoes of the application.
And with this rich immersive experience, the designer becomes ever more important in the workflow, right?
Right. So the idea here is that we're now building these rich this rich user experience applications, and designers become, you know, like you said, ever more important in the sort of the whole software development lifecycle. And the idea here is that, you know, as developers, we can sort of build all the interactivity in the application, but we can't necessarily make them look good. And that's what the designers come into play.
Absolutely.
So we actually had a chance to sit down with a designer and a developer at Riopalooza, and Karina Barber, she's actually a designer that works in Microsoft in Redmond, that she's working part of the UIFX team there, and Tim Hewer, who's a program manager for the Silverlight team in Redmond as well. They kind of sit down and we kind of discuss this whole designer-developer workflow process and kind of maybe what it looks like at Redmond.
So should we listen to the interview?
Let's do it.
Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and we're bringing this podcast on location from Riopalooza in Chicago. Riopalooza is this community event around rich internet application technology. It's a fun community kind of day. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Bost.
Hello.
Yeah, we're a little punchy. It's a little after lunch. We're actually sitting down here. Our interview today is with Karina Barber. Karina, can you tell us a little about yourself?
That's me. I am a user experience designer at Microsoft. How long do you want this to be? I have a long story for you.
Well, can we get to the story a second? Because we'll introduce the other.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Tim Hewer from Microsoft is also here. Tim,
hey,
can you tell us about yourself?
I'm Tim. I'm a program manager for Silverlight Community.
No, you are the Silverlight Stud or something like. We got to give you a better name than
Dave
program
suggested
manager.
Silverlight Swashbuckler.
Silverlight Swashbuckler is good, but you're actually part of the secret Scott Goo Ninja Army, are you not?
Ninja Army, yes.
Yes, okay. You work alongside with people like?
Like Scott Hanselman, Joe Stagner, Jesse Liberty, right. And we just recently hired someone for Windows Client as well. So
very good.
We can't mention their name.
I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. So,
but we welcome him to Microsoft.
Yes.
So yes. You guys gave a talk this morning. It was actually our keynote, and I apologize when we set up the agenda. I forgot you guys were on West Coast time, and we put you guys first. So everybody else is like, wow, 9 in the morning is kind of early, and Tim's looking at me like, 9 in the morning? It's like 7 o'clock in the morning to me.
Yes, it was hard to get up this morning, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Karina, you had a little issue with the fire alarm at the hotel going off at 2 a.m.
Yeah, fire alarm at 2 a.m. that woke me up, and I've had no sleep. I took the red eye here. And got stuck on the tarmac, didn't sleep the entire... I'm just completely sleep-deprived, and then that fire alarm killed me. Completely put me over the edge.
The perfect time to put a microphone in front of somebody, right?
Exactly.
So tell us your story, then. You said you had a long story about you, yes.
I forgot.
Well, the whole idea, I mean, it's kind of strange, right? User experience at Microsoft? What is that?
So I can describe what I do, if I think that might be interesting. I do have to tell you, though, I am relatively new to I work on a team called UIFX, and it's relatively new for me. And so I'm still working out how I work, but I can describe the optimal situation, like what a user experience designer does at Microsoft, because I had that experience when working on Visual Studio Team System.
How long have you been at Microsoft?
I've been there forever, since 1998.
Since 1998? Okay,
yes.
So you're 10 years into it, and you're still trying to figure out what you're doing? So I have no hope. I've been at Microsoft 18 months, and I have no idea what I'm doing.
No, the cool thing is things change. You can move around, lots of opportunities. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, it, yeah, I'll never, I, I'm still growing up, right? Still figuring out what I want to do when I grow up. But yeah, so let me describe what a user experience designer does. Like, there was a person on the panel just a little bit ago who was talking about, you know, the way that you should work as a, you know, development team, which includes designers, you know, program managers or whatever they're called, developers and basically a whole team of people. And he was kind of describing a more agile method. Well, that's kind of the method that we typically use as designers at Microsoft. So we'll work with, maybe it's a program manager who's driving like the business analyst type role, you know, gathering requirements, working with customers to gather those requirements. But we're involved from the very, very beginning. So we're understanding what these requirements are, why they're being made, really, you know, like having these conversations with customers so we can understand where they're coming from. I mean, you really need to do that if you're a user experience designer.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on a previous Thirsty Developer episode, uh-huh. That the importance of, you know, you don't need to be, you know, 100% involved in absolutely every meeting, but you need to be there to hear firsthand.
You do.
You know, both we talked about it, the designer needs to be there.
Yeah.
A developer and the architect, the person, you know, building the big picture pieces, so...
Exactly. And like Dave was saying, you never, you know, you may think the program manager, the developer is going to know everything about a specific topic, but you're going to be surprised, like the insights that you can gain from like the other people involved who it may not, you know, normally be their role to be, you know, involved in this sort of thing. You're always gaining like useful insights. And like you said, like the people all involved are being a part of the process, it's just going to make the whole development process move more smoothly. Everybody's going to have a, you know, clear understanding of what it is they're doing, why they're doing it. I 100% agree. I think that's...
So the UIFX team, are you guys like a, you know, kind of a SWAT team that I call upon if I need, you know, user experience to come work on my project? Or
all right, so I'm confusing you. I'm confusing me too. So I actually am part of a core design team, and we do work like that. It's called Developer Division Designers, I think. I'm part of a group called DDE. That's like... physically who I report up through. I'm working and sitting with the UIFX team. So that's the team that's working on, you know, various aspects of Silverlight. So I sit and work with them. But yeah, it is kind of like that where, you know, there's a need and, you know, we have, like, we pull from the central pool of designers to go and work with these teams. Yeah, so it does work like that.
So for the people listening on the podcast, some of the UIs that you've worked on, is there a public thing that they can talk about? Like you mentioned, you were on the team system, you know, team. Yeah. So is there some element in there that, you know...
that I worked on?
Yeah, that we can look at and go, oh, yeah, Karina did that. File save
I
as.
Good job at it.
Tim wasn't on the microphone, so he had to crack a joke. So,
so I actually worked on product planning for the next version that's coming out. I was deeply involved in that. So when that comes out, you can, I mean, from start to finish, every aspect of Visual Studio Team system I was involved in. Prior to that, I really focused on the source code control and work item tracking aspects. And let me just say that there were development constraints that made it so we couldn't get all of the UI that we wanted implemented. So
there's the disclaimer, or is it the apology? It's one of the two, right? So we'll see a lot of your work in Rosario, I think, is the code name. We talked about publicly that.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah. Yes, you will.
Yeah, Rosario has been thrown around, but it's not 2008, the shipping product. It's VNext.
Exactly. Yes, precisely. So I will have been involved in pretty much every aspect of that because, like I said, I was involved in product planning, and that's where, that's where the designer, after the requirements are have been defined, or somewhat defined, you go in, you have your key use cases, your scenarios, and we actually storyboard those experiences, and then again sit down with our customers and make sure that this is the right thing. We actually had storyboards that were some 300 slides to describe the key experiences that we wanted to support. So I was involved in that, which touches on, like I said, every aspect of Visual Studio Team system. It's a long word.
Let's walk back to this morning with your guys' session with the sort of the designer developer workflow. Sounds like you're living that every day in the job you do. Is you're working from the design aspect and you're integrating yourself with the development staff and trying to build out these next generation solutions, if you will. So kind of walk back to today's session, since I missed it and you can fill me in. Unfortunately, I missed it. And just kind of talk about what are the challenges with sort of that designer developer workflow.
Do you want to start?
You quite possibly missed the best session of the day, just to let you know, Nate. No. But I think, what we tried to demonstrate was that there is a possibility, especially with how rich internet application platforms are evolving, that there is a capability of doing a more cleaner and clearer separation between designers and developers. And, as the UI platforms advance to be a lot more richer, it makes it more difficult for developers like myself who may have an affection for design but can't execute on it very well to make sure that the experts handle that. So what we tried to demonstrate was starting from a wireframe, so starting from, maybe those business requirements have already been talked about, a meeting's already been had, and, Karina as a designer has come up with a wireframe. We've come up with a template that we want to develop, and as a designer has taken it to a certain wireframe standpoint that me as a developer could then start working actually coding against. And with Microsoft and Silverlight and the tools we have available to us, Karina was able to do that in using Expression Blend. The end result would be a XAML file. And then me as a developer, I would work on a C# file, VB file, whatever my code platform of choice is, but keeping that separated. So as the wireframe gets handed off to me, I just respond to the events, handle the different business logic, but probably rarely have to touch the XAML as long as that partnership has occurred in those discussions, and the designer has created a wireframe complete enough for a developer to work on. But it also could work both ways as well.
So a wireframe basically is just kind of a layout of a UI, just a regular button, a regular text box, hand it off to the developer. Developer can provide the interactive pieces behind it, and then later on down the road, the designer throws a skin on top of it.
Sure. Yeah. So, essentially our wireframe started out to be a list box that looked, like a list box, right? Like a typical Windows list box. And, the end result was something that at first glance, you would probably not think is a list box, but might think is just, iterated elements on there. But in fact, the XAML actually didn't change. It just had a style applied to it, and the code didn't change at all.
Yeah, and what was neat about your presentation was that it's a really,
compelling and interesting demo to show, you know, that I'm a designer like Karina, and I start off in Blend, and I, you know, and I give something that I can turn over to Tim, the developer, and he can wire up the code. What was really neat about yours, and you didn't get to show all of it because of a little bit of time constraints, is the designer reinserting themselves in the process to do fit and finish work. Because on web development, I often, you know, when I was did web development, they would give me, you know, the HTML cut up from Photoshop. Looked great. It's fine. I would wire my code into it. There would be a change at the last minute, and this is where what I call hilarity ensued. Right? It was like the Keystone Cops. The designer would come in, totally break all the code. The developer would have to come back in. You know, all of a sudden, either the developer's out of their element, touching design stuff and CSS and all, or actual graphic images, or the designer's where he or she doesn't want to be, you know, touching things that could potentially break from a code standpoint. What's really clean about the workflow that you guys showed was that you were able to reinsert yourself in the process and not break Tim's code.
And what's important about that, too, if I can add a point, is something that was brought up during the lunch panel, as well as that the history of a development lifecycle is that design was only a step, and only a step in the beginning. And now that these platforms are advancing, and, you know, in the case of Microsoft, our tools are following suit as well, that design becomes part of the iteration of the development process. And, you know, with the way that Blend and Visual Studio work together, share the same project structure, that iterative process becomes easier because of what you just mentioned, being able to hand off one-to-one.
And our marketing departments want to lock the design, like, literally seconds before the product ships. They still want to be able to change things, you know, as they go along, because, you know, they've seen, you know, reactions in the market. You know, they want to be able to modify things. And what's nice about, you know, the next generation of tools is that it lets you do those kind of things.
Yeah, 100%. I have to tell you, I absolutely love Blend because of those capabilities that you guys just described. I want to, like, step back, and I want to just talk about my previous experiences, like, prior to, you know, tools like Blend and Visual Studio working seamlessly together. I would... in many cases, like, I would wireframe out, like, a whole entire experience. I would create my visuals, kind of like what you were describing. I would throw them over the fence to the development team. It sounded like you had a really good, you know, like, it worked pretty seamlessly.
No, it didn't. I was cleaning up the experience, but.
but things would, you know, the developer would go off and do their magic, and it would come back, and I'm like, wait a minute, did you see what, like, that picture? This looks nothing like my picture. Or, I, you know, as a designer, like, these...
I made a designer cry once for what I did with her design. Literally. I'm sorry, Jenny, to this day. You know, I think she'd had a bad day, but I pushed her over the edge. She was in tears by what you saw what we did with her design.
Well, I mean, it comes down to... I mean, if you're not, as a designer, not actually, you know, working in that code or on those, you know, projects simultaneously, like, touching the real working bits, you know, it's hard to know what you can and cannot do. But, yeah, I mean, there's those visual aspects are extremely important. And Blend, like, it just makes so many possibilities, like, become available to, you know, producing really kick butt. Can I swear?
Of course.
We're not ruled by the FCC, so.
Really? really kick butt. Really, really cool UI. The designers can focus on what they're good at, you know, and I can really, like fuss about the UI, which is what I like to do. I like it to look a particular way. And the developers, they don't want to, you don't want to care about that, do you, Larry?
Well, they don't, but they do, right? Because what I envision happening is now that we've provided these cool tools, is that we're going to see a lot, you know, a lot more really bad designs, because the developers are going to take Blend under their chest and start, you know, trying to use the tool and not really have the background or the sort of the schooling behind how to create good design. So, I mean, is there, you know, people like Tim and myself who would love to, you know, aspire to be a good designer as well as developer, you know, is there hope for us? I mean, what are some hints or tips or guidelines or even resource sites that we can, you know, get guidance
use
around creating
to
good design?
Learn to be, well, I think, so what I've been doing, like, recently, like, we have a set of controls, like, I've actually created a set of skins, you know, for those controls that, you know, people can use, you know, and have a unique look and feel for their controls. I'm hoping that there's going to be a wider variety of templates and controls, you know, control templates, like even application type templates that people can leverage, you know, developers can leverage to create nice looking applications. I mean, I know that kind of stuff exists in the web space. Like there are templates to help you, you know, like that you can choose from to like, it's decently designed and you can make slight modifications to it to kind of suit your needs and customize it a bit for you. But it's a good starting point for you. And I think I'm hoping and I'm expecting that that kind of thing is also going to happen like in this, you know, Blend Visual Studio, you know, Silverlight WPF kind of workspace as well. Do you want to add anything?
The templates, by the way, are on Karina's blog. I think that they're available for download and all that.
Yep.
I got to say, and we'll put the link in the show notes to Karina's blog, as always. I got to say, those templates are hot. I mean, hey. they are really cool. And I look at them, and when I see stuff on the internet, I'm like, God, you know, could I really pull that off? And really, literally, all I have to do to get that look and feel that you've got is download the template,
yeah,
use the basic control set in Silverlight, apply the template, and I'm done. You know.
Yeah, so see, I mean, I'm expecting that sort of thing is going to be more widely available and more variety available for developers to leverage. And yeah, okay, so there's also some cool functionality in Blend. There's snap lines. So you can align things nicely and it will help you. I love that.
What's great about it, I mean, if you think about XAML, right? I can open up a XAML file and I could read it. I can go line by line and see exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, back in the day when I learned web development, is, you know, how do developers learn? They learn best by looking at other people's code. And so you can do the same thing with XAML. It's not just this. It's not a binary file that all that information is packed in there that I can't look and learn from, but I can actually open the XAML file and view it.
Oh, exactly. Right. That's a really good point.
Time out. Total penalty flag on this one, though. XML should be used, not seen. give me a tool that translates that into something that, you know, with nice property boxes and all that. I personally can't look at XAML and make any sense of it.
I do.
Well, you're also an architect, and you look at whiteboards all day long, so you don't know how to. I guess it's a matter of being able to read that code. So, but I mean, case in point, there's this hands-on lab that's actually up on MSDN for creating a WPF application. It was part of the launch hands-on labs that we had. It's all around this physician kind of application. Mm-hmm. You know, patient management application. And it was a cool looking application. I mean, it was a typical, I would say not a typical, but it was a Windows client application, and it kind of had some pizzazz to it. You know, you open the screen, had all this movement and animation. And so I was kind of like, wow, I wonder how they did that. So I just opened up the XAML file and looked at the different animations, you know, the different panel definitions and sets that they had defined, and then the animation sequences that they had defined and when the things kicked off. And I learned a ton by looking at the XAML file versus going into Blend and trying to figure out piece by piece what was happening, what was going on.
Yeah, I was, you know, in the – so I'm going to steal a line from Mike Palermo, who's one of our regional directors. He calls that the case methodology, copy always, steal everything. and I think it's, you know, especially with this new what I personally consider as a developer, this new focus on user experience over the past couple of years, we're starting to see a trend in what Karina was mentioning as well, not only for, you know, maybe like Blend stuff. You know, there's a site out there called Blendables where you can, you know, download WPF widgets and things like that. But in addition, like, there's almost like this sense of open sourceness for design now. It's particularly visible in websites, right? There's a lot of website template companies are out there that people are contributing, mostly in blog space like WordPress, right? There's a site out there that hosts thousands of, you know, quote unquote open source designs. And I think that it's real interesting to see that trend happen, where we've had that trend in software, right? It's been easy to learn in software because you can go to SourceForge, download something and grok it rather quickly. But, you know, again, like, you know, Dave, you and I trying to learn a design skill, we're basically asking, like, could you please insert some creativity in our brains? You know, I mean, that's a real hard challenge, right? I mean, it's not something, you know, math can be learned, right? You know, creativity is not something that has an absolute answer all the time. And I think, you know, as we look at these open source kind of design concepts, you know, Karina's templates, and I think we'll try to start doing more of that on Silverlight.net, for example, as community resources, or the Expression community as well, to be able to provide that for people to learn, especially, you know, because I agree with you. I think one of Microsoft's weaknesses has been the ease of our tools, and we've always created tools that you know, dare I say it, enable really bad software design. And, you know, maybe, you know, is Blend one of those that we'll start seeing a bunch of, you know, Battleship Gray Silverlight applications, right, that exist out there. But I hope not, and I think not, because I think people are starting to think different. And I think those resources will come for, you know, I think designers will jump on the opportunity to provide those resources for developers.
Also, what I think is different is that what I'm starting to see, I mean, you know, back in my previous life when I was a consultant, you know, working the corporate development gigs, they didn't have designers on staff. You know, that was always either never considered or, you know, afterthought. The only time it was is when they were building websites and they needed some sort of marketing firm to come in and throw some slap some nice graphics up there. But I wouldn't really necessarily call them designers per se, and really thinking through the process of how is the user going to use this application and what's the best way to place the information, the interactivity, and the data on my screen where it's best used for the developer. I mean, you got to take those things into consideration. You can't just slap stuff up there. And, you know, as applications have progressed, as the industry has progressed, I mean, people are expecting more and more, dare I say it, pizzazz as part of the applications they're working with.
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to, you know, design can make or break a product or an organization or, you know, like a software these days. You want something that's compelling, like that's going to compel users to use your product. And then once they're compelled to use it because it's like, I don't know, super hot looking or, you know, something new and interesting that they've never seen before, you need to make sure that the usability of that product or that whatever it is top notch so that they actually want to continue using your product so that your organization can make money. So, I mean, like the whole move to focusing on user experience, I think it's a differentiator. It's, you know, something that's going to keep your users there. It's super important. And like you're right, you do have to think through the whole user experience that, you know, your customer's going to have with your product, like from start to finish. And you need somebody who's going to be able to take the time to look at that whole user experience. And then there's like the visual aspects, not just the interaction aspects or the cognitive aspects, but the visual aspects that are, you know, that's part of the whole compelling story. And yeah, you need these designers now. So it's a huge selling point. I mean, to have a kick-ass user experience, right?
Cool. We've upgraded from kick butt to kick ass.
Yeah.
So I got one final question. And this may be, you know, a couple part question, and this is more around the tooling, because one of the first questions that you guys got, you know, at the end of your session when it says it's time for questions and answers, was, you know, is there support for a source control system in my designer tool? So an Expression Blend. And this is kind of a two-part question, is that, you know, have we made too much of a distinction between the two roles? Because one of the things you can't do without a hack is, you know, edit code in Expression Blend. At the same time, I think that there's, at least personally, I've struggled with, there are things that I can't do in Visual Studio, or that I could do them in Visual Studio, but they're a lot easier if I just jump over to Blend and do them. Do you really need both tools, you know, 100% of the time? And can I really say, okay, I'm never going to look at Blend, or I'm never going to look at Visual Studio?
I wouldn't recommend it. You know, you were saying you don't want to look at the XAML, and you guys were saying you do want to look at the XAML because it's a good learning tool. I agree. I mean, and I've done that myself many, many times, especially, I mean, for instance, I'll use Blend to create like the UI, you know, like that meets my vision. And then I may be working in Visual Studio to do code behind. And let's say that I want to tweak, I don't know, some small little aspect of the UI. I want to change a color. I might just do a search and replace in Visual Studio,
right,
for that sort of thing. But when it comes to like modifying huge aspects of, you know, complex vector type graphic UI, there's no way I just want to do that in Visual Studio. Oh. Absolutely no way. But I'm definitely going to want to do that in Blend. But you obviously need Blend for the code behind, and it's really great for just doing fast and minor tweaks to the XAML. I do that all the time.
Yeah. And my example is, you know, creating a template for a button. You know, yeah, you could do it in Visual Studio, but it's a lot easier just to jump over in Blend and do that.
Exactly.
I think, you know, you raise a really good question of have we made too much of a distinction. You know, that's definitely one for probably other teams to, you know, who made that decision to do that. But it also is important to note that, you know, Expression, you know, the Blend is a tool was to, you know, to go out and target a specific demographic, primarily. And it will evolve over time as well. So, you know, some of the features that I think developers are always questioning, like, you know, where's IntelliSense in Blend and stuff, I think those are really developer-centric questions more than what the, you know, what the main users of Expression Blend.
Right. And
Karina's disagreeing with.
Yeah.
You know, like there are some designers who are kind of, they do both. I mean, I think they're becoming more and more, and I've met several here at this conference who do both. I like working with both tools. I think there's a need for both, but if I want to make quick tweaks to things, you know, even in Blend, I want IntelliSense. You know, like if I just want to quickly change a color or quickly add I did this in the presentation, in fact, because I forgot to add one of the columns that I wanted in my grid. I did that in the XAML because I knew it needed to match one column, you know, one column that I already had in there, one column that I already had in there. Why go and, you know, do it manually when I could just copy and paste something that already exists? And like IntelliSense is also really useful. I want it in both. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Yeah. And I think this is part of the evolution of the product, because at some point they had to ship the product, and this is such a new paradigm that we needed to get it into people's hands to get the feedback to say that, yeah, we need to have this feature here or this feature here, or and quite frankly, some of the things are probably just not useful in the other tool that are there.
Right. It'll be an iterative product. And actually it's revising on quite a fast click, I think. I mean, we've had more so than other Microsoft products, let's put it that way. You know, we've had two revisions in 2 years. I mean, that's pretty respectable compared to the gap that we usually see in the developer tools. So I think the feedback is being heard loud and clear. It's being taken, and changes are being affected. And even in Expression Studio 2 tools, we've seen a lot of implementations based on designer and developer feedback. And as Blend evolves for Silverlight 2 development as well, you'll see that we're taking a lot of feedback directly. It's a great team that's listening to a lot of the external feedback to change the tooling and the platforms as well.
And, you know, so just kind of, you know, wrapping things up there, I mean, you mentioned Silverlight 2. That's really going to be, in my opinion, like a game changer as well, because, you know, with Silverlight 1 was great. However, there was still kind of a large learning curve to kind of get there, if you will, to kind of build those kind of applications. But with Silverlight 2, now we have the .NET framework built in there, and we essentially have the capability for millions of .NET developers to sort of jump right into that paradigm to take their existing skill sets and start building those kind of applications for the web.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the ecosystem of Microsoft developers that's out there is quite large. And, you know, for having designers being able to tap into those resources, as well as companies that are already Microsoft shops, to, you know, being able to leverage the same resources is quite exciting. Sure.
So I kind of have a final question for both of you. And I don't know, maybe this is a controversial question. I don't know, for Saturday. is Microsoft... Are we the right company to kind of be pushing this whole UX, you know, movement, if you will? Or not pushing it, but, you know, at least being part of that movement of kind of pushing that, you know, design is important, UX is important. These are key things that we need to think about and we build in our solutions.
My opinion is that, you know, Microsoft's a market leader in the software development space. And for us not to have a position on things that are interesting in the IT space, in the design space, and, you know, web software space, I think would be irresponsible. So I think it's entirely appropriate for us to have a position to ensure that our technologies and our tools are adapting to what people want and are asking for. And clearly right now in the web space, that's what people want and are asking for. So, there definitely is some learning for us as an organization to understand, you know, user experience. You know, we have people like Karina on teams to start injecting the life cycles that we talk about with our customers in our own product lines, you know, and I don't think that's always been the history of Microsoft, but I can certainly see it firsthand having an impact on certain products.
Right. So with that, people kind of look at Microsoft and their whole idea of, you know, kind of people take some jabs at, you know, Windows and some of the tools that we have and wouldn't really call it really good UX design per se. So Karina, I'll ask you, is this a change in Redmond, or are they hiring more UX designers to sort of bring that level of sophistication, if you will, to our platform?
I definitely think so. Now I'm in Visual Studio, and so there are, you know, like we're really focused on like the Visual Studio, the desktop application space for the most part. So maybe Tim can answer this better. I mean, but I know like just even in our team, We are looking.
I didn't want to put you on the spot or anything.
You are. Yes.
I think Scott Goo's Private Ninja Army needs a designer.
I think
so,
too.
You can go back to the guys and talk about that. So.
I love that Private Ninja Army. It's good.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being on Thirsty Developer today. Thank you for taking time out to come out to Chicago for Riapalooza. Again, sorry for the fire alarms and the flight delays. But
isn't that funny?
But thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Larry, it was great that we had a chance to talk with Tim and Karina at the Riapalooza event. And, you know, for me, I actually learned quite a bit from Karina about how Microsoft is sort of changing their process and really getting the user experience people involved with sort of the process of building our software applications, which it can honestly be said that, you know, Microsoft, you know, we do need a little help in that arena. And so looks like we're moving in the right direction there.
You know, what's nice is there's a phrase that we use internally called eating our own dog food. You know, where we'll internally test products before, you know, they're released to customers. Like, you know, we're a great test bed for, you know, with 80,000 employees plus, you know, independent contractors and other people, we're a great test bed for Exchange. You know, we're a large company, so if we use it internally before it's released, it makes the product better. And it's nice to see that we're eating our own dog food with the designer-developer collaboration by having people like Karina work on applications that traditionally you wouldn't think, you know, have a lot of user experience play in them, like Visual Studio. And I'm excited to see her work in the next version of Visual Studio, the things that she's done in the past.
Yeah, because we know there's definitely elements in sort of VSTS that need some help with the designer input there.
Yes, sir.
So with that, Larry, I think we should move into a bloggy Chanel. Why don't you kick it off this week?
Okay, my blog is actually from the TED conference. It's blog.ted.com. Do you know about TED, Dave?
I do know about TED, Larry, but why don't you impart some knowledge onto our listeners who may not know about the TED conference?
So TED is a conference that they have periodically that's just a bunch of smart people getting together and doing some presentations, but it's almost like a storytelling type experience. TED actually started back in the 80s. I didn't realize it had been around that long. I first heard about it in, you know, kind of the early 1990s. But TED is actually an acronym. It stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design, and it was the whole genesis of it was pulling those people together. And they've got a great blog where, you know, sometimes, you know, a couple times per day, you know, at least every other day or so, they actually show one of the past TED presentations, you know, on the blog itself. And it's generally, there's a little bit of text with it, but they'll have an embedded media player in there where you can actually see some of the presentations. Some of them are like 8-10 minutes long. Some of them are 25. They're all pretty interesting. But go ahead and check out that blog. That's one you should know, blog.ted.com.
So actually, I'm going to tell you a story about, you know, something related to the TED conference here, and it's, I don't know if this is going to, if I need to turn in my dude card after I tell you this story. I may have to. I'm not quite sure. But so I was sitting, you know, I was in my home office, you know, working on some stuff, and, you know, my wife, she has her computer in there as well. We kind of share office space in the house. And she watches this Oprah webcast, right? I forgot what it's called. It's essentially, you know, Oprah had Eckhart Tolle, who wrote this book. They had kind of like this life balance workshop going on. And then from there, they kind of had these continuing on these webcasts. And one of the first webcasts that she had after Eckhart Tolle was this story of this woman. She's actually a doctor. She's like a neurosurgeon, or she studies the brain or something along those lines. I can't quite remember. But anyways, she's a doctor, and she studies brain patterns and brain waves and all this. And she was having some problems, you know, in the morning when she woke up, kind of just weird sensations and stuff. It turns out she was having a stroke, and she didn't know she was having a stroke. But like once she realized she was having a stroke, she almost kind of had this out-of-body experience where she was kind of like, wow, this is really trippy. Kind of, she was interested about what her mind and what her body was doing in relation to it. As it turns out, she actually had, she presented this topic at the TED conference, and I think that's where maybe Oprah found her or something. I don't know. Once again, she wrote a book, and it's all about Oprah and selling books. But essentially, she told this story of her experience as part of the TED conference. And actually, after, you know, my wife was watching this webcast, I was kind of overhearing, you know, what was going on. It sounded interesting, but kind of weird at the same time. I actually went out and checked out that video clip of her presentation at TED. It was actually pretty awe-inspiring, to be honest with you. Scary as hell if it ever happened to me, but her telling the story was was very, very interesting. So I'll definitely – we should post up a link to that as well. I think it was one of the very, just far out, you know, if you will, presentations from the TED conference. So I don't know. Do I lose my dude card for, watching
you
Oprah?
Cry?
I don't think I cried, but I was just kind of like, what? Huh? It definitely got my attention, let's put it that way. So I sat there and watched it.
I actually heard her story on NPR recently. They did an NPR segment with her, and I was on one of their NPR stories of the day. So it was an interesting story about how, you know, she was able to study it, you know, herself because of her experience. But it was kind of scary if you woke up like that.
Oh yeah, definitely scary. But she kind of took it and turned it around and just kind of used it as a study mechanism. And I guess it took her quite some time to recover, like 8 years after that as well. And she's perfectly normal and fine now. But her name is Jill Bolte, I think it is. And it's part of the Oprah Soul Series webcast. I will point you to the TED conference. I'm not going to point you to an Oprah webcast. so we can take that with heart there. That leads to my blog, you should know, which has nothing to do with Oprah, has nothing to do with strokes, but actually has to do with kind of the topic we discussed here, the whole designer-developer workflow. And this isn't necessarily a blog per se. It kind of, you know, the blog led me to the site, actually. But the blog is actually nibbles.wordpress.com. And this actually leads you to a site called Nibbles Tutorials. And what Nibbles Tutorials is, it's actually a set of different tutorials around utilizing Expression Blend and Silverlight 2 and WPF. And there's actually a number of different tutorials and samples that you can go through and actually start getting immersed in how to utilize these new tool sets to kind of build these next generation applications. But, you know, along with that, so there, that's nibblestutorials.net. But along with that, I was actually kind of poking around with samples because I'm trying to learn this stuff myself. I'm a developer. I'm kind of a closet designer. I mean, I don't have no design sense. I used to draw a lot when I was a kid, but it pretty much stopped at that. But I would like to make something look nice, you know, so I want to figure out how to utilize these new tool sets and everything. But I actually went back to the Microsoft Expression website, and I was actually kind of impressed because I know the Microsoft Expression website had a lot of tutorials and walkthroughs and samples and videos and stuff. But I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised by how much that content has grown over the past few months. So if you actually go to Microsoft.com/expression and click on the Learn tab up there, their site has continued to grow in the amount of content that they have for training around the Microsoft Expression products. And that's not just Expression Blend and Expression Design, but things like Expression Media, Expression Encoder. But also they have a lot of training content around Expression Web. So if you're interested in how you can utilize Expression Web to really attack the semantic web, you know, Expression Web is definitely a tool to look into, and there's a lot of great tutorials around that I'm definitely going to check out because I want to learn how to do that as well. But there's kind of a couple things in there. We'll provide links in the show notes, but definitely check out nibblestutorials.net if you're interested in learning how to utilize some of these tools around designer-developer workflow.
And Dave, do you know who does that site?
I do not know who does that site.
It's Kelso, who's a designer that works with Karina.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Kelso Gomez.
Yeah, we saw him last year at Tech Ready.
That's right. So a little shout out to Kelso and great job on Nibbles Tutorials. And I think with that, we're going to wrap up this. Actually, before we wrap up this week's show, it's kind of a little shout out I want to make. So the whole idea, you know, I'm kind of throwing this at you, Larry, so just be prepared here.
So I'm bracing myself, Dave.
So
after the whole dude card thing in the Oprah webcast,
you never know where I'm going to go with this, do you? But actually, you know, the whole idea with Thirsty Developer is to try to build a community around, you know, imparting knowledge, sharing knowledge across our developer skill sets, and not just Microsoft, you know, developers, but, you know, we want to sort of talk to developers across all different skill sets and subject matters, you know, across different technology boundaries and such. But it's also kind of about building a community. And actually what I want to do is kind of expand that community just sort of beyond this podcast in and of itself. But something that, you know, we've been doing kind of off to the side, we just started recently, is actually getting together every once in a while on Xbox Live and just kind of duking it out in Halo 3. So what I wanted to do is we actually started setting up kind of a recurring meeting to get together on Xbox Live, like, I think, what is it, every second Thursday or Tuesday of the month and every fourth Saturday or something. And what I want to do is I want to invite the Thirsty Developer listeners to come join us and just kind of get together on Xbox Live and have some fragging fun with Halo 3. And so what I'm going to do is actually kind of just on our website, we'll post a, kind of a schedule we're going to get together. And I'll invite everybody to come join us on Xbox Live. And then down the road, maybe we can lead into some other activities, get-togethers online, you know, maybe some little World of Warcraft action if you're into that or something. But just kind of expanding the community, get together, have some fun, and that's what it's all about. But if you're on Xbox Live, you can definitely, you know, send me a friend request. My gamer tag is BogeyD. That's BogeyD. On Xbox Live, and once again, we'll have links up to that, and we'll look to see you on Xbox Live, and then have some fun.
And we'll add our gamer tags to the show notes too.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just trying to expand the community and expand the fun. So that's what it's all about. So with that, I think it's time to wrap it up this week, Larry. What do you say?
Let's send her home, Dave.
Let's send her. Let's do it. So, as always, we welcome you to comment on each and every show by going to thirstydeveloper.com. But also, we welcome your comments and your suggestions and kind of what kind of you know, topics you'd like to see us on, to talk about on Thirsty Developer. And you can shoot us an email at thirstydeveloper@live.com. And once again, you can reach me, myself, and my blog at daveboss.com. Get a hold of Larry over at LarryClarkin.com. And, of course, you can always reach us. You know, you can send me a friend request on Twitter or Facebook. Twitter, it's just twitter.com/DaveBost, and Larry's twitter.com/LarryClarkin. And on Facebook, just do a search for our names, and you'll find us, and we hope to see you online. And with that, everyone, take care, and we'll see you next week. How am I Star Wars Nano Nano?
There's two kinds of people in this world. Those that like Star Trek and those that like Star Wars.